are listening to
Metal Shop's Backstage Pass.
All right, it's Metal Shop here, 99.9 KISW. If you hear some people in the background, it's because we're hanging out at the substation. Obviously, people are loading in for the show tonight. We're here before the actual show starts. There's practice spaces all over, so bands are probably getting ready for a big weekend, practicing up their set. We've got Matt Harvey from Exhumed, man, from San Jose. They're a death grind band, just put out Horror Killer Record on Relapse Records this year. We got our big 2019 year-end list coming up. I think it might have to show up on that list. How's it going, Matt?
It's going great, man. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's the day after Thanksgiving. How do you celebrate when you're on the road? Like, do you go to a Denny's? You go to a Cracker Barrel?
It depends. You know, traditionally, when we've been on tour on Thanksgiving, we've been in areas that have Cracker Barrels.
Sure.
This year, I don't know. I don't think you guys have
no Cracker Barrels there. Yeah.
But we got together with our buddies in Necrot, and yep. We got an Airbnb. We just rented out a whole house.
Cool.
We did a big grocery shop, and their crew guy Ricardo is a Italian chef by trade.
That's awesome.
So we just sort of like threw a bunch of food at him and let him go wild, and you know,
came up with something nice.
Oh yeah, it was great. It was a really nice day. We just hung out, got drunk, ate a lot of food, you know, normal Thanksgiving.
That's great, man.
Called my mom, you know, like a good son would.
Absolutely.
And then got trashed. It was a great day.
So you guys have been like road dogs for a long time now, long-standing band, been toured a long time. Have you pretty much been on tour for every major holiday?
Well, no, because I mean, you would never really be on tour for Christmas.
Okay.
Because there comes a point pretty quickly in the month of December where
it's too gnarly.
It's just the weather is prohibitive, but really everybody's discretionary income is going towards Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
And if you're like, well, I got to buy this thing that my girlfriend or my wife or whoever wants to keep them happy for several months versus do I want to blow $50 on going to a show and buying a shirt and having a couple of beers, it's a no-brainer. You gotta, you know, you gotta maintain the home life. So everybody's kind of focused on Christmas, and that sort of takes over about December 10th.
Yeah.
December 12th is really like the last kind of couple of days
you can
really get away with doing shows. So never been on tour for Christmas. Many birthdays, many Thanksgivings, Labor Day, you know, everything else, Memorial Day. I don't think we've ever played a show on New Year's, which kind of bums me out. Lots of Halloween shows, but never New Year's.
Halloween shows. That's got to be a cool thing. So do you guys dress up?
It depends on kind of how organized we are.
Yeah.
And also, you know, just time and everything permitted. This year, we had this like 80s slasher idea, and we were going to do all this shit. And then we went to the Halloween store and they were out of everything, and everything was really expensive. So
we're not going to be sexy Harry Potter, okay?
No. No, I would not be sexy probably anything. But
see, I want to see the Exhumed New Year's show. Watch you guys chainsaw the
Exhumed
ball in mid-year.
New Year's rocking Eve. Yeah. But we ended up going this year as yuppies. We all went as like Chads.
Nice.
So we all had like flip-flops and Izod shirts and white shorts and
what's
stuff.
What's up, bro? We're Exhumed.
Yeah, we were in Austin, and there's nothing more terrifying to the residents of Austin, Texas than a bunch of yuppies from California. Yeah. So we thought that this was the scariest costume we could come up with. And we had fun with it. It was kind of weird playing the whole show, though. Like, after the third song, I was like, why am I in flip-flops? Oh, yeah, okay, all right, it's Halloween.
Did you, like, a man bun or something?
Sebastian, our guitar player, did, and he pulled off the yuppie look disturbingly well. I think because he's a little bit younger and thinner, he looked like a trust fund kid that spent like, you know, a gap year in Tibet, man. And he's all like, whoa, totally mindfulness, bro. And it was just like, oh God, it's a little scary looking over at the guy. It's like, this. Oh no, that's Ross. Okay, it's fine.
So your new album Horror is out now. Run us through the songwriting process for Exhumed. Is it kind of a collaborative thing, or is there a main key riff writer of the band, or how does take us through the process?
Well, we do, you know, our guitar player Sebastian lives in Baltimore. Our bass player Ross lives in Oakland, and our drummer Mike actually just moved recently to Ohio. But before that, he and I lived in the same town in California called San Luis Obispo. And so you, generally it starts with, I'll come up with a, you know, a semi-completed skeleton of a song, and then we'll go in the rehearsal room and make sure it actually works. And then, you know, I just send demos to everybody. And, you know, that's kind of been the formula really for the last several albums, where I'm kind of, you know, I'm steering the boat, but it's not like a dictatorship. It's just that logistically that seems to be the way that it works. And it's great to be, you know, to all live in the same town and go in the jam room and play four nights a week and bash out the songs and agonize over them. But it's also a different kind of freedom when you don't have that time commitment and you're able to just sit and be like, hey, I got this idea. Cool. Here's a demo. And of course, now with the internet and recording technology and everything else,
you can put a record out.
Right. It's extremely easy to do that. So that's kind of been the formula. And everybody, of course, has editorial input. And, you know, at this point, I think if anybody didn't like something, we would just throw it away. We're not going to sit around and fight about riffs. You know, we got a million riffs. So, but that said, Sebastian brought a song to the table, The Red Death, for this album, and Ross wrote the lyrics for that one. And then most of the other ones, I think I kind of spearheaded. And, you know, like I said, it's not a dictatorship, but it is sort of like a, I end up being the kind of prime mover of the band because it's just easier that way.
Sorry, band dad.
Not on tour.
Okay.
I kind of outsource that on tour.
How often does it happen where you have the skeleton or the framework of a song together and one of the bandmates comes in with something sick that just kind of like derails what you were going with, but you have
but
to.
But in a good way.
But no, in a good way, because it's a really good riff.
Yeah, I mean, I love when that happens, honestly, because you know, it's just a nice surprise, and we're at that age now where we've been doing this long enough. We're not like precious about it. Like, we don't give a shit. When we were in our 20s, we used to like get in fist fights. Like, you don't like this riff? No, it's going in the song. Like, I'm gonna beat you up or throw a fire extinguisher at your head. That happened one time. but now we've all mellowed out a lot, and we just have fun writing and bouncing ideas off each other. And it's nice because, you know, Sebastian also plays in Noism, where he's one of the, you know, kind of the primary songwriter. So he's a good person to bounce ideas off of, and
that's awesome.
Pretty prolific, so it goes really fast, you know.
That's killer. So if you're just tuning in right now, we're talking to Matt Harvey from Exhumed, and they're playing at the Substation. By the time you hear this, they will have already played, but you should pick up their record. It's called Horror, and he actually mentioned before we went and started recording on the Zoom microphones, he actually had his own radio show. so you had your own radio show when you were in, was it a college radio show, or was it a you were kind of getting paid a little bit of money?
It was a weird thing. I was living in Hawaii for a couple of years. I was living on Maui.
And this was during Exhumed?
No. Okay. We split up for about five and a half
years. That's right, yeah.
This was sort of towards the tail end of that. And Maui obviously is a small island.
Yeah.
So you kind of quickly get to know other people that are into metal or whatever. And I had a buddy that was doing a radio show, Aces Radio Rehab. And he had some health issues, and he was not going to be able to do the show for like a month and a half.
Okay.
It was. And so he just asked me to take over while he was sick. And I ended up doing it for, like almost a couple months. And it was a really fun way to spend a Saturday night. Just, you know.
We know all about it. We've been doing that for almost 10 years now.
Yeah, it's good stuff, man. And, you know, it was really cool because it's a very small market. But KRKH was the radio station.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's your typical classic rock that rocks format.
Exactly.
And I don't know what mega corporation they were owned by, but whatever. But it had been a long running thing. Every Saturday night for 3 hours, there was this metal show, and it was completely open format. We just sort of did whatever we felt like, you know. It was really good fun.
So let's say like you jump in, and we get sick all 1 week for Metal Shop, and you jump in, and Matt Harvey's in charge. What would be your go to like four or five records? You'd be like, all right, we're turning this shit on.
Well, my philosophy was like I would always kind of start conservatively because I think the first hour was 8 to 9 p.m.
Yeah.
It's been a few years now. This is like 10
Get some
years
Dio
ago.
In there, maybe.
Dio, Maiden, Metallica, Priest.
Ramp it up.
Then, you know, whatever requests. Invariably, there's like a Pantera request in the first hour that's going to be there no matter what. And then, you know, as the second hour starts, it would kind of veer towards more Slayer and then Testament and then Overkill. And then maybe, you know, of course, peppering in some newer stuff with everything. And then by the third hour, which was 10
to
11.
You're just playing Devourment and Last Days of Humanity.
Yeah,
and just
play whatever I kind of
dosing people with heinous sounds, right?
Right, right. Because, I mean, you know, most people at that point are either on their way to the bar or at the bar already.
Yeah.
So it
sick.
Was, you know, you, at that point, you kind of just fly under the radar and just play whatever the hell you wanted.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, it's like you got to kind of ease them in and just keep people happy, you know.
So if we're, let's turn the clock back a little bit further. Let's go back to the beginning of your musical career. What was the first album that you purchased with your own money?
First album I purchased with my own money was in 1985 or 86. It's kind of hard to figure out the chronology back then, but I was in sixth grade, I guess. And the first tape I ever bought with my own money was "Licensed to Ill" by the Beastie Boys.
Nice, sick.
And then I think it was "Raising Hell" by Run DMC, "Radio" by LL Cool J. That was like what I was into. And then Two Live Crew, I think, was happening right around the same time.
So yeah. What sent you down the direction of the dark stuff, the metal path?
I think there was a kid that transferred to my school in sixth grade, and he asked me if I liked heavy metal, and I was like, what's heavy metal?
You're like, nah, man, I got my Adidas on. I got my gold chain, dude. I went
to a private school, so we all had sweaters and corduroy pants.
Yeah.
But I just didn't know what heavy metal was, and you guys bleep stuff out, right?
Oh, yeah, of course,
okay,
yeah.
Cool. So I think he was like, oh, you I was like, what, huh?
What?
I was like, who is this kid? Like, it's just some kind of music, right, I guess? And so I just wanted to, that kind of piqued my curiosity.
Yeah.
And then I guess by this time it was 86, maybe, late 86, because it was like, or maybe early 87, because it was like Ozzy's tribute.
Master of Puppets was out and all that.
That wasn't what I heard first, though.
Okay.
First metal album I bought was Look What the Cat Dragged In by Poison.
Nice.
So, but like, tribute, the Ozzy live record had just come out.
Oh, yeah.
And Whitesnake. So it must have been 87, because Whitesnake Self-Titled was a new album at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And then I heard like Twisted Sister, Quiet Riot,
sure.
Maiden. And then I got the 12 tapes for a penny deal.
Okay, yeah. And BMG or Columbia House. Or
yeah,
something.
Columbia House, I think it was. And then in those 12 tapes was Master of Puppets. And then once I heard that, I was like, well, I don't need these other tapes anymore. Like, all right.
You're right.
And then that was kind of the beginning of, you know, everything that led towards, you know, getting into death metal and everything. So,
what's your first death metal band? What was the first record? I'm sure you could probably.
Yeah, I think the first death metal tape I got was Scream Bloody Gore, and that would have been probably early 88, I guess. And I wasn't really sure. Like,
yeah, were you into it at first, or was it too much at first?
It was a little. I liked it, but I was like, I don't know, there's something different about this, and I didn't know the difference between thrash and death metal.
Sure.
You know, I was like.
It's all just extreme.
Right. I mean, I liked like Flag of Hate and like Persecution Mania and records like that. And I thought that this was kind of in that same category, but slightly different. And then I remember as that year went on, you kind of started getting the idea that there was this other sort of kind of music that was starting to get noticed. And that was death metal. And then I heard the Peel Sessions by Napalm Death in 1989. And then that was like completely mind blowing. That just changed everything as well. That was like Master Puppets and that album were the two that just like the switch was flipped and nothing would ever be the same.
All right. You know? All right. It's all a downhill or uphill from here, depending on how you look at it. Right.
Right.
So obviously, you know, you guys are, obviously very influenced by horror based on the name Horror,
right
the new album. So was that something you were always into, like kind of growing up, or like what were the first couple like horror films that kind of also flipped the switch for you?
The first one I really remember kind of choosing as a little kid and being affected by was like the first Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that scared me, and then I couldn't sleep that night. I had to be like 9 years old, maybe.
Never
sleep
the same, man.
And I remember finally I fell asleep at like 4 a.m. or whatever, and I woke up the next day and everything was fine, and I was like, I'm an idiot. That's just a movie.
Yeah.
Like, oh, cool. I could just watch this and have fun with it. And then that went downhill really quickly, because before I even knew what metal was, I was already like trying to con my parents or my friend's parents, you know, even when you have slumber parties, you know, we were watching like Toxic Avenger,
yep,
and Reanimator and Hellraiser and Lair of the White Worm and all these like sort of mid and early 80s films, and
Chopping Mall.
Yeah, that was all great stuff, man. And I think once I got into metal, and specifically once I started hearing Scream Bloody Gore, that was when it kind of clicked, like, this is the audio version of these movies. And really, I mean, you know, horror and metal have been intertwined since the beginning. Black Sabbath is a movie first, and it was a band.
Yeah.
So, it's just such a natural marriage, and, you know, I think that we've always sung about horror and gore and splatter stuff, and I think that as a death metal band, to me, I was like, well, you sing about death, because that's why it would be death metal. If you sang about outer space, it would be called outer space metal.
Right.
And of course, now there are loads of death metal bands that do sing about outer space, but when I was first getting into this, I was like, that was the norm, really. You either sang about like Satanism, or you sang about gore and horror.
Yeah.
Cool,
man. Or
Let's talk gear for a little bit. What was your first guitar?
My first guitar, I think my dad had an old acoustic guitar, and I was like, after hearing Master Puppets, I was like, I'm going to write songs. I'm going to be in a band. That's what I'm going to do. And so I asked my parents for a guitar, and they're like, there's a guitar in the closet. I was like, no, like an electric guitar. They're like, we'll play that one for a few months, and we'll see. And so I did, and I, you know, kind of picked up a few things. And like, my uncle was a jazz fusion guitar player, and my grandma was a piano teacher, so I, you know, it seemed like, okay, like people can play instruments, you know, like I can figure this out. So I just kind of dicked around for a few months, and then we went to the flea market and got this like really Gibson SG copy,
yeah,
bargain basement kind of thing. And then a friend of mine was like, kind of, this was the eighth grade, so this would have been 88, I guess. He was kind of getting out of music and into, like, you know, chicks and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And so he sold me his little crate practice amp. And then I got an Epiphone Les Paul. That was sort of my first, you know, proper instrument that, you know, is not a piece of trash.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of my first guitar. All the early Exhumed stuff was written on that. But I never played it live, because it was like a Sunburst. And I was like, this is not a death metal guitar. Like, it should be like a, you know, either like a Super Strat style or something pointier or whatever. So I would always borrow somebody else's guitar until I got an Ibanez RG. I want to say it's like a 570.
Yeah.
Because I had a job by then. Like, I was, you know, this was like 91, 92.
Okay.
And I was working at a car wash when I was 15. My parents were like, get a job. And I was like, cool, now I can just buy records and guitars and stuff, but mostly records.
Well, those old Ibanez RGs were freaking awesome.
No, that was a great guitar, man. It played awesome, and it was I kind of miss actually both that and that Epiphone. I wouldn't mind having either of those guitars today.
What are you playing on now?
I've been working with ESP for the last couple of years, and I'm very, very happy with the guitars. I'm really into V's, so that they're the perfect company for me. I have my white ESP Arrow with me, and then my backup guitar is the ESP Eclipse, which is that Les Paul kind of shape. They're both great guitars. They both play great. I got the Eclipse because we were in South America earlier this year.
Nice.
And when you fly every day, you don't want to do it with a gigantic flying V case, because they're going to charge you extra. They're going to try to charge you extra. And my Spanish is not really good enough to argue, like, no, you can't charge me for this. I would just be like,
sure.
Where's the library?
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff. That's the level of my Spanish.
Yep, so, exactly.
So I got the smaller guitar with a smaller case, and great. And ESP is, I mean, they're kind of like the leading metal guitar manufacturer right now, and it's very clear why, to me anyway.
Nice, dude. All right, so winding down, just got a couple questions here. What we all know the big four of thrash, you know, at least is that's what people know: Anthrax, Slayer, Megadeth, Metallica.
Right.
If you had to pick the big four of death metal, what would it be?
Well, I mean, it's a little bit tough to kind of use it to compare it, because the big four was a term that was minted in the 80s.
Yeah.
Because those are the four records selling the most, or the four bands selling the most records when the genre was commercially new and at its sales peak.
Okay.
So if I was to go back and think about when death metal was new and at its commercial peak,
let's reword
1992-ish.
Let's reword it. Mount Rushmore.
I want to
you want to hear? Okay, sure, sure.
So I would say in like 92, probably the big four would have been Death, Obituary, probably Morbid Angel, and then I don't know if. It probably would have been Napalm Death at the time, because they were selling truckloads of records, and Cannibal was still kind of coming up. I mean, Cannibal has sort of since outlasted everybody and become the biggest death metal band in terms of commercial success and cultural cachet, in certainly in the United States ever. But at the time, in 92, those were sort of the four leading bands. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're my four favorite. I'm more of like a Napalm, Carcass, Death, and Repulsion would be my four favorite.
I think that might have been the coolest answer to that question that I've ever heard.
No, absolutely. Most, yeah.
It's very unique.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like you're kind of like a scholar of death metal, so.
I mean, you
Or just a nerd.
You hang around long enough, you pick up some
Which we all, I mean, that's like the reason why we do a radio show, is we just love nerding out and playing metal, so.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I spent way, way too much time thinking about this stuff, you know?
Yeah. But, hey, it's treated you well. I mean, obviously, it's provided a life for you, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, when I think about it, it's like so many aspects of my life would have happened differently if I wasn't involved in this music. I mean, for everything from, you know, my friends and meeting my wife to having so many different experiences and traveling different places. And so it's really been a net positive, you know. Singing about rotting corpses has worked out okay for me.
That's the quote of the night. Well, you seem to still have your thumb on the pulse and still be a fan of the music. What are some of your favorite newer albums in 2019? And who are some up-and-coming bands that you think are doing it right?
I'm not really super great with like the timeline of like when things are coming out anymore or have come out. I know that there's this record was really good, Blood Offerings by Necrop, but I think that was
2018.
Is it that old now? Holy Jesus, this guy's been on tour forever. I thought that was a really great record, Through Wilderness by Mortuous, Chad from Necrop's other band, which was actually features our old Exhumed guitar player Mike Beams, so I'm a little biased, but I thought that was a great record, but I think that was also last year. The new Gatecreeper is really cool. They were a band that I was like, yeah, these guys are pretty good, but after being on tour, they've really like won me over from me being like, yeah, these guys are pretty good, like, hell yeah. So that's always nice. I think the PLF put out that Jackhammer and Death Blow of blah blah blah. Their titles are really long.
Yeah,
I think PLF is one of the best. They have some of the best riffs of
and live. They're so gnarly.
Yeah,
just
those
so
two guys
fast.
Just destroying everything. Dave's other band, Oath of Cruelty, is coming out with a new record that's going to be a monster. There's a band, Ripper, they just came out with an EP, and I can't remember the name of the EP, but the record was Experiment of Existence that came out, I think, last year. The EP is great. It's got like a sadist, like early atheist, but really, really aggressive kind of South American vibe.
Sick.
I think they're awesome, you know. And it's a great time to be into death metal, because the new Two Mold record was quite good. I thought that was really killer.
What'd you think of the Nocturnus AD? You get a chance to check that out?
I didn't really listen to it, but I was never like that big of a Nocturnus.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough.
And this sounds super elitist, but I thought like the Science of Horror was a pretty killer demo, but the record was a little light.
Yeah, well.
You know, it's very unique sound. Like, I give him absolute credit for having
for sure.
a recognizable sound that you hear it and you know it's Nocturnus.
Yeah.
And I think that's the hardest thing to do for a band.
Oh, so absolutely.
Me not being a big fan is not a dig.
Because there's plenty of fans.
Right.
Exactly.
It's just a case of my taste, you know.
But we appreciate you being honest with it. And a couple questions to wrap up. What are your plans for Exhumed in 2020, man? We're about the end of the decade, which is crazy.
Yeah.
I'm sure just continue touring and maybe, I'm not going to speak for you, but what are your plans?
We have, we're working on some Australian, Japanese, and Asian dates.
Cool.
Coming up. So that's sort of been trying to coalesce and it looks good. We're going to Europe with Necrot for about 6 weeks in the summer.
Sick.
Doing a bunch of festivals and a bunch of other stuff. When's this show going to air?
This Saturday night, so tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night, but it's in Seattle, so it's fine.
Yeah,
we're working on putting together another U.S. tour for next year already. We only have like 9 more shows, so
yeah.
Hopefully this it shouldn't affect the last 9 shows. So that's not 100% for sure, but so we're doing that, and then my other band, Gruesome, is getting ready to. We're getting material together to go into the studio in the first half of next year, so we should have a new album coming out next year.
That last Gruesome album was awesome.
Oh, thanks, man.
I actually always run into the member of your band that sells merch,
Robin. Yes.
I just saw her at King Diamond. Yep. I was like, Gruesome, and she's like, hell yeah. She's always. Is that like her full time gig?
That
is just doing t-shirts
gig.
For all kinds of different bands.
She does merch. And she's a tour manager.
Oh, okay.
She's also a band manager. She co-manages Exodus.
Metal is her life.
Oh, yeah. It's her life. It's her livelihood. She was like a pharmacy tech, and she just stopped. She's like, I'm making more money.
Sure.
Doing this, so. Yeah, no, she's great, and she's everywhere. And that's one of the reasons why we haven't toured as much is because between my schedule with Exhumed and Dan also plays in Possessed, which going back to your albums of 2019.
Killer record, man.
Probably
what a comeback.
My favorite record of the year.
Oh, yeah.
I think the best comeback record I've ever heard in my life.
It's crazy, man.
Sorry, like I said, I'm not that great with this.
Oh, it's all good, dude.
But
there's just so much good stuff,
right,
too. So.
Right. So between Dan working with Possessed, my stuff with Exhumed, and then Robin working with everybody, it's been difficult for us to coordinate stuff. But we're trying to fix that and do a full U.S. tour next year, so.
If you like death, check out Gruesome.
I mean, we're a tribute band. We're a death tribute band. Yeah. We just write our own songs.
Totally. You know, yep. Hey. Yeah, that's awesome, man. And I guess one last question. Pick a scar on your body and tell us the story of how you got it, man.
Let's see. I don't even know if you can see it anymore, but I used to have this little crescent-shaped scar on my knuckle.
Yeah, right on your knuckle.
And
I
think it was 94, because I was going to see, it was Incantation, and it was Incantation, no, it was Grave, and I think it was Grave and Demented Ted and somebody were playing in Berkeley, and
that's awesome.
I was standing outside in line, and they had this big sort of glass rectangle in front of the Berkeley Square sign for the venue, and I was just literally standing outside having a conversation, just sort of gesticulating, and somehow my finger caught the glass plate just right, and made this really bad cut.
Oh my God.
I was bleeding profusely, and nobody believed me. I'm like, I just cut my hand on a sign. They're like, oh, dude, who did you punch in the face? Like, whose tooth cut your hand?
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I just cut it on the sign, and everyone's like, feeling like you couldn't cut yourself on it if you tried.
You gotta fight, man.
Right, and so everyone's like, oh, dude, you must have somebody up, like, it's cool, I'll keep it on down low. I was like, no, dude, I just cut my hand on a sign by accident.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just thought that was a funny.
That's
so
funny, dude.
I'm a lover, not a fighter.
Hey,
hopefully.
Exactly. So do you have any final words for the Northwest before we let you go and rock the stage?
It's always good to be up here in Seattle. It's a little colder than I would like, but we're stoked to be here. We're excited for tonight's show, and hopefully you went to the show and are now listening to the radio show.
Exactly.
Seattle's always been very, very kind to us.
Hell yeah.
And we're stoked to be here, man. It's going to be a rager.
This has been Metal Shop's Backstage Pass.